May I say to you in introducing our speaker that in this remarkable world of ours in which we live today, strange things have always occurred. And we of this generation have seen many of them transpire. One of the most remarkable of all is the transformation of recent enemy countries into firm allies. And the mutual distrust and extensive armaments against each other that exist between some former allies. We are glad today to welcome as our guest speaker West Germany's ambassador to the United States, the Honorable Karl H. Knapstein. Herr Knapstein has a long and honorable record of service to his country. He received his higher education in the universities of Cologne, Berlin, Bonn, and Cincinnati. From 1936 to 43, he was a newspaper man on the editorial staff of a Frankfurt newspaper. And from 45 to 49 was deputy state minister for reconstruction and liberation of the German of Hesse. From 1951 to 56, he was consul general at Chicago. And from 56 to 58, ambassador to Spain. And 58 to 60, was state secretary for a foreign ministry at Bonn. While from 60 to 62, German observer at the United Nations, and since 62, has been German ambassador to the United States. I might say that his experience as the German ambassador to the United Nations has given him an insight into the functioning of that body that he may comment on today and which I think will be most interesting. He has received numerous decorations in the service of his country. The subject chosen by our speaker for his address today is one of great interest to Americans, and it is, and I quote, Berlin and its significance in the German foreign policy. It is with pleasure that I present to you the Ambassador of the Federal German Republic, the Honorable Karl H. Knapstein.
Mr. Chairman, my dear colleagues of the Consular Corps, gentlemen, when I see and look at that watch before me, which limits my time, I'm thinking of a delicious meal which I had once in Paris at the Tour d'Argent. The most famous meal they offer is pressed duck. In other words, they take a duck, put it in a container, and press and squeeze it so hard that its size is reduced to about 50%. I have similar feelings as the chef of the Tour d'Argent has when he does that. For him, the result to squeeze in everything in such a container is a delicious meal. I don't know if I will be successful to squeeze my topic in the time of 25 minutes, but I'll try to do my best. Gentlemen, Berlin is not a problem in itself. It is not as if the Soviet Union wanted to conquer the city of Berlin this year or next year or one of the next years to come. Berlin is only an instrument for the Soviet Union. It's only a lever. It's an instrument of blackmail to reach certain other goals. You know that Berlin is situated in the middle of the Soviet zone's territory, like an island. This geographical fact has enabled the Soviet Union to use Berlin for a colossal maneuver of blackmail. For the last 15 years, the Soviet Union has not spared any efforts to have its East German colony, the territory they have conquered, have that colony recognized as a sovereign state by the rest of the world and by its allies of the Second World War. In particular, and to attain this, for example, by a peace treaty to be signed by all participants. Only such a contractual recognition would lend status under international law to the Soviet zone of Germany and thus would guarantee its existence at least for a time. Germany, as well as all free nations of the world, have refused to consider such recognition. In order to put the countries of the free West under pressure, the Soviet Union uses the isolated situation of Berlin as a means of blackmail. It says to these countries in the West, you either take part in a peace treaty by which the Soviet zone of Germany shall be recognized as a sovereign state and become an entity under international law, or we conclude a separate peace treaty with the Soviet zone and confer upon it the right to control, to stop access from West Germany to the island Berlin. If you intend, in spite of the separate peace treaty, to transport goods or men from West Germany to Berlin, you have to conclude an international treaty with that so-called German Democratic Republic, granting you access to Berlin. This threat against the West, proclaimed for the first time in November 1958, has up to this day gotten the Soviet Union nowhere. The West resolutely refused to give way to this blackmail and has solemnly pledged instead to uphold free access for its own troops as well as for the German civilian traffic to Berlin under all circumstances. The whole North Atlantic Treaty Organization has shared this obligation so that for 4.5 years now, the Soviets have not risked following up their threats with action. Since the failure of the Soviet adventure in Cuba, the Soviets think it still more risky to precipitate a Berlin adventure in addition to the Cuban adventure. Therefore, it seems possible that they will be satisfied with the present state of affairs and that they may agree to a modus vivendi. The only proven means by which the Soviets can be prevented from starting such adventures, the only language they understand besides Russian, is strength and determination of the free world not to withdraw under threat. This by no means excludes the readiness at all times to talk on sensible solutions of problems. But maintenance of the principle of self-determination must be upheld and can never be negotiated. One could discuss many means and time periods which could help the Soviets to save face in a withdrawal from Germany, and also agreements which would represent safeguards for all participants and give both sides a certain degree of security from attack by the other side. Whether they will take place at all, and when such serious negotiations with the Soviet Union and the participating countries of the West will take place, is a question which rests, as the ancient Greeks used to say, in the lap of the gods. But we hope that in the enlightened self-interest of the Soviet Union, they can take place one day. The Soviet Union must have the urgent desire to reach a lessening of tensions and peace on its western border in order to gain a free hand to deal with the controversies of an exploding China, which the Soviet Union must anticipate. But that lies in a farther distant future. As I mentioned before, Berlin is not the main goal of the Soviet Union, but the main goal is the recognition of their annexation of East Germany by the Soviet Union, is the recognition of what we in Germany call the zone, connecting with this expression a certain notion of prison. And now, what is that Germany beyond the Iron Curtain, which is called German Democratic Republic by its communist lords? It has been said with a certain justification that this name is utterly wrong, because that regime is not German but Soviet, is not democratic but communist, is not a republic but a dictatorship. The right name for it would be Soviet Communist Dictatorship instead of German Democratic Republic. We are used to calling it Soviet occupied zone, which describes the factual status best. The people in West Germany say simply the zone, as I said before. 22 Soviet divisions are stationed in the zone and stand guard so that any uprising of the people against the communist regime would immediately be drowned in blood, as was the case on June 17, 1953. A small group of communist functionaries, Germans who have been trained for years in Moscow, rule over the people of the zone with an iron fist and never give them a chance to express their own will. Please understand that the people in the eastern part of Germany are exactly the same as those in West Germany. They have the same way of life. Their thinking is identical with that of the Germans in the West. They have the same national history. Their culture is the same as ours. Composers, poets, and philosophers are held in common in both parts of Germany by the people. Should they be allowed to have a generally free election, it is highly probable that the number of freely cast votes for communists would be still smaller there than in the western part of Germany, because the people in East Germany have had 18 years of bitter experience with communism. But there are no elections of that kind. There are elections of a sort, but they are a distortion of what is meant by the word election in a democracy. To vote means that you elect a representative by choosing among different candidates. But in the zone, there is no choice. The voters are confronted with a list, and they have to agree to that list. It is as if here in the United States, if you permit me that example, you would have so-called elections in which a vote could be cast only for the Republican ticket and nothing else. Nobody would call that an election. The people in the zone cannot even stay away from the polls, which you could do. They have to cast their votes for the communist list because they are assiduously controlled as to whether they have gone to the polls or not. Whenever they do not, they must fear losing their job or suffer worse consequences. Thus, everybody goes patiently and resignedly to the polls and votes for the prescribed communist list of candidates. I leave it to you to judge whether this can be called democratic. Let us sweep the whole facade of the Democratic Republic and let us see what the zone is in reality. In the war, the Soviets have conquered a part of Germany, and they seek to keep it as a Russian colony. That's what it is. Such conquests have happened since the days of Adam and Eve. The Persians have conquered Greece, the Romans conquered Gaul, and the British India. The Spaniards made their conquest of South America, and now the Russians have conquered a part of Germany. Whereas formerly, one admitted honestly and freely that one had conquered a country and set up a satrap or a consul or a viceroy or governor in order to administer the country, in the second half of the 20th century, under the auspices of the United Nations, it is not thought decent anymore to conquer other people's countries, and the conquerors feel a bit ashamed to have a spade called a spade. Therefore, the Soviet Union does not call this conquered colony what it is. Instead, it is given the facade of a democratic republic, with a president, with a prime minister, and even with the appearance of a parliament. But all that is a fake, and only serves to hide the fact of a Russian colony, planned as a bridgehead for the further expansion of communist and Soviet rule into the rest of Europe. I must add a word of explanation in order to avoid a misunderstanding. Here and there in this country, I have found that American friends have believed that in East Germany something took place similar to what this country would have experienced in the past century, if the Confederates had been victorious. In other words, a part of the country on its own initiative would have detached itself in order to conduct its own political life independently of the other part. Nothing is more wrong than such a comparison with East Germany. It was not the people in East Germany, not even a part of them, who wished to found a state of their own. It was a military foreign power which, as a conqueror of that country, founded the regime on Bayonet Point and, in doing so, used German stooges who had been trained for this purpose beforehand in Moscow. Whereas the southern states in the Civil War stood for separation from the north and for setting up a state of their own, the people in East Germany, with the exception of a very tiny communist minority, are all against such a separation. Those who were not ready to recognize this were confronted by the erection of the Berlin Wall with very imposing proof. For a time, every week, tens of thousands of Germans in East Germany left all they owned and fled to the Federal Republic in order to live in freedom. Up to the time the wall in Berlin was erected, no less than 2.7 million people had fled from that communist paradise in order to get into the hell of capitalism. Even after the wall went up, several thousands tried to escape from terror and oppression and to reach freedom, even at the risk of their lives. During the Russian Revolution, it was Lenin who said that soldiers fleeing from the front line had voted with their feet for the conclusion of an armistice. This phrase can be applied to the flight of the Germans from the zone. By fleeing, millions of people have voted with their feet against the communist regime in the Soviet-occupied zone. In doing so, they cast their vote as proxies for those who had to stay. 17 million Germans have had to stay and are locked up in this huge prison. The border with West Germany is hermetically sealed by barbed wire, by watchtowers and minefields. The only escape route from the prison was through Berlin, but that too was sealed off by the Wall of Shame in 1961. I could talk to you for a long time about the paradise and of this prison it is like. But allow me to let it go at that, and instead I would like to put the question, which I presume you are impatiently waiting to be answered: what can be done to open up that prison, to restore unity to the two parts of Germany, and thereby solve the Berlin question as well? I should say there are three ways to attain this, but two of them are not practical, maybe thinkable, but not practical at all, because they would not achieve our goal for us. The first would be to give in to the Soviet Union. We could achieve the reunification of Germany almost instantly if we were ready to allow all of Germany, including the Federal Republic, to become communist. The Russians have offered us that in a more or less concealed form again and again. This offer, of course, we must turn down. Accepting it would mean that all of Germany would become a big concentration camp with barbed wire all around it. Freedom of thought and speech, freedom of our spiritual, economic, and political life would go down the drain. We would have to pay with our freedom for the reunification of Germany. This is too expensive for us. Our esteem of freedom is higher than for national reunification. What we want and desire can only be this: reunification in freedom. A second way to reunification, which the Soviets are particularly afraid of, would be reunification by force, by war. This is the way in the history of mankind in which many conquered countries were reconquered. We reject this method now and in future because it is utterly senseless. After the Second World War, by huge toil and labor, we rebuilt our country from utter ruin. We do not have the least desire to have all this destroyed by a new war. Every effort to gain reunification by force could only have one result, namely that all of Germany, East and West, would become an atomic heap of ruins and one big cemetery with countless millions of dead. This means of gaining reunification also is too expensive for us. Therefore, the federal government has expressly pledged never to use force to achieve reunification or a settlement of the German eastern borders. And this is a matter of deadly earnest for us. Only the third way is left open to us. It demands endless patience. Darkness beclouds it, and no end is in sight today. This is the path of a wise policy, of diplomacy, and of negotiations. The intellectual weapon which we carry for this political diplomatic exchange is the democratic weapon of the right of nations to self-determination. We request that this right, which has been granted all young countries in Asia and Africa, and which conveyed to many of them nationhood and political independence for the first time, must also be granted to the German people. We request that each eligible German in East and West must be allowed to go into a polling booth so that he can express his will there on a ballot, and that the result of that plebiscite then is put into effect. We know perfectly well that the Germans, should they be granted a free plebiscite, if need be under supervision of the United Nations, would fall on this ballot. Reunification in a free democratic Germany, desirous of living in peace with all her neighbors. We also know why the Soviets fear such a vote and why they have turned it down again and again. They know as well as we do what the result would be, namely, Ivan, go home. We have found out that the call for self-determination is the best intellectual weapon in our hands, and that the Soviets fear it as the devil fears holy water. We shall not cease to shout this call for self-determination for all Germans again and again into Soviet ears. And we are convinced that the whole world will not only listen, but will support us. Because self-determination is a democratic principle sacred to all nations. Perhaps in future times, the chapter on the 20th century in the Book of Universal World History will be inscribed the Century of Self-Determination. We shall not cease to fight with spiritual weapons, with political diplomatic methods, by information and by negotiation. We shall hope and fight with patience, tenacity, and skill. We shall not leave any feasible method unused to regain the inalienable human right for the people in East Germany. We hope that one day the Soviet Union will give in. During the course of history, conquests of foreign countries have never been everlasting. In our democratic age, more than in other times, no conqueror can keep a nation of a high cultural standard forever divided against the will of its people. The Persians left Greece one day. The Romans returned to Italy from Gaul. The Spanish had to give up South America when Bolivar came. The British returned freedom to India. Thus, the Russians one day will also leave East Germany. We hope that they will realize their own interest in creating friendly relations with their great Western neighbor, instead of living under permanent tension with her. Besides that, the Soviets have had a lot of trouble with their East German colony for many years already. Their East German viceroy, Ulbricht, has by his bad government caused them so many difficulties that they might have set free this East German colony long ago were it not for their fear that by doing so they might cause the collapse of their whole system of satellites in Poland, in Czechoslovakia, in Hungary, and other countries. We know that our goal will not be attained very soon, but we shall be patient and tenacious. The national unification of Germany, out of a large number of small princedoms, to the foundation of the German Reich in the last century, took about 70 years. The reunification of a Germany divided by foreign force will also take a long time. I think, however, it will not take 70 years. I said a while ago that we shall use the means of diplomacy, information, and negotiation to approach our goal. One of the diplomatic means in this effort to prevent the Soviet colony in East Germany from being recognized as a sovereign state by other states. Up to this hour, gentlemen, not a single state in the whole world, with the exception of the communist countries, has recognized the Pankow regime as a sovereign state, in spite of 15 years of desperate Soviet efforts. Nor has any neutral or neutralist country recognized the regime in the Soviet zone or taken up diplomatic relations with it. This undoubtedly represents a success for the so-called Hallstein Doctrine of the Federal Republic. According to this doctrine, the German government considers it an unwanted involvement in German internal affairs if a foreign country recognizes as a sovereign state a forcibly separated part of its own territory. It also considers this an unfriendly act. In such a case, the Federal Republic breaks off diplomatic and economic relations with such a country, so that it is obliged to choose between relations with the German Soviet zone or with the Federal Republic. In some neutralist countries, there are circles who claim they do not want to get mixed up in the German question, which they consider part of the East-West conflict, and that therefore they seek to establish diplomatic relations with all countries that exist. We do not consider this point of view as a neutral point of view. Whoever takes up diplomatic relations with a communist regime in the eastern part of Germany does not stay neutral, but unequivocally takes in the West-East conflict the side of the Soviet Union and a stand against both the free West and the neutral countries of the world, which do not consider the regime in the Soviet zone a sovereign state. Up to now, we have been successful in this policy towards the Soviet-occupied zone, as I said. There is not a single non-communist country in the whole world which entertains diplomatic relations with the communist regime in the zone, whereas the Federal Republic has relations with no less than 97 countries in the world. Finally, let me ask the question that is raised so often to me. Must Germany remain divided? Germany must not remain divided. It ought not to remain divided, and it shall not remain divided. As long as it is divided, there will be no rest in Central Europe. The incision which the Soviet Union has made through the middle of the body of the German nation will remain a festering wound as long as the democratic principle of self-determination is withheld. We hope and we believe that reunification is not only a German concern, that attaining it is also in the interest of the West and even of the Soviet Union itself. We, the Germans, do not want this reunification in order to set up a great and mighty state in the heart of Europe. No great German Reich of holy, unholy memory. But what we want above all is that the 17 million people in the zone should live free of fear and free of misery, that they live as we live in the western part of Germany. This is much more a human desire for us than a political one. We hope that this problem will find its solution by negotiations between all participants. Gentlemen, I thank you.
And now we come to the question and answer period, wherein our members propound to you, Mr. Ambassador, the many things that are on their minds, the things that they talk about among each other and at home. And we have a nice grouping of questions here that pretty well cover the field. So if you'll kindly return to the lectern with me, we will start with this question. Will East and West Germany present a combined team at the 1964 Olympics?
Well, we are trying to. We want to keep politics out of the world of sports. But it will be very difficult because, of course, the people in East Germany use the sport as a means of propaganda and a means of politics. So it might happen that we cannot set up a combined team, which we would like to do.
The American businessmen will like this one, or we hope they'll like your answer to it. Are Berlin and West Germany encouraging American industries to buy or build new plants and to operate there? A recent report says that the economy there has slowed down. Is this true?
Well, the economy has not slowed down. It is very interesting to notice that Berlin is a city without any unemployment. We can only say yes to the question, are Berlin and West Germany encouraging American industries to buy or build new plants there? Many of them do, and they do it with great success. They have certain privileges as to taxation and so on. And I believe the more American industry enters into Berlin, the better will be the situation there and the better the prospect of keeping Berlin going.
Will Germany work with the Nassau Agreement?
Yes, we will. Germany was the first country after the Nassau Agreement had become known, which made its viewpoint clear that it will cooperate with the United States in implementing the Nassau Agreement to the fullest degree, that we are going to do whatever we can do.
Would you support early resumption of East-West talks on Berlin?
Well, we have had many talks before. We would never say no to the resumption of talks, but we are very skeptical about the outcome. You know that a new series of talks, of exploratory talks, is beginning very soon, and we have not opposed it. You know that we consult each other in Washington at the ambassadorial group about those questions. And our viewpoint, the viewpoint of the German government, that was that one should not leave untried any possibility that is offered. So new talks will be resumed, talks, that is, no negotiations, will be resumed to find out whether the Soviet Union has softened its viewpoint on Berlin. But we are hopeful, but still a little skeptical about it.
This question goes back to an old matter that is of interest to all of us. that we are interested in, kindly explain the German-French treaty.
Well, the German-French treaty has stirred much excitement, both in Europe and here in the United States. To understand it, gentlemen, you must think back that for about 400 years, the French and the German have battled each other in many wars. I don't remember how often the French have been in Germany and how often the Germans have been in France, not as visitors. And that the German people as well as the French people are fed up with that political situation. It is a deep-rooted longing on both sides of the Rhine, if I may say so, in France as well as in Germany, to set an end to that apparently everlasting hereditary enmity. So after the war, immediately after the war, Chancellor Adenauer made it one of his points on his agenda to do whatever was possible to end the enmity between France and Germany. I remember, if I may make that personal remark, some years ago at a party congress, it was in 1946 or something, he said that his greatest dream would be that one day German officers, military officers, should be trained at the French military academy at Saint-Cyr and vice versa, that French officers should be trained in German military academies. That was in 1946, and everybody thought the gentleman must be a little crazy. Something like that is impossible. But his dream has come true. He has spared no efforts, and the result is that today not only officers, but whole units of the German army are being transferred to France and being trained in France, and vice versa. This is not only a sentimental affair between the two nations, but it is also a sentimental affair besides being a political one. We want to work together, we want to cooperate, we even want to cooperate in the military field. We are exchanging many military secrets and things like that. So the time has come that there will be no more French-German controversy or no more French-German war in the future. But, gentlemen, that does not mean that Germany has become a satellite of the French Republic. Nothing could be farther away from the truth. We have certain differences of opinion with the French. And frankly, why shouldn't there be differences of opinion between very good friends? We want to be very good friends, but that doesn't keep us from having different opinions on certain things. On certain things, for instance, the common market. The Germans are in favor of Britain's entry into the common market. We are in favor throughout all the political parties and the whole German political leadership. We want Britain to be a member of the market as soon as possible. The French have different opinions on that. Number two, as I mentioned before, we are cooperating with the Nassau, with the implementation of the Nassau Agreement. We are ready to cooperate and put our forces at the disposal of the multilateral nuclear force to be built up in the future. That are points of different opinions. The French, as you know, do not consider the Nassau Agreement as favorable to their national policies. So we are going to ratify this German-French treaty in the German Parliament. There's not the slightest doubt about that. But that doesn't mean that we have to agree on every political issue with the French that might come up in the future.
This question takes a little different tack, and it's quite personal as far as Germany is concerned. Do West Germans consider East German officials traitors to Germany as it was before the Second World War? Do the Germans consider the present East German officials traitors to Germany as Germany existed before the World War?
Oh, I see. Well, We do not consider them as traitors. We consider them as functionaries of the Soviet Union. The question is whether you would think that that would imply treason. One thing is certain. They have no right to speak for the German people in East Germany. They have been installed in East Germany as by the Soviet army. The Soviet army brought them all along from Moscow when they came into East Germany, and now they have set up the German Democratic Republic, and I assure you, gentlemen, they have done a very poor job. A man with a little more cleverness than Ulrich had could have won over many more Germans in East Germany than he actually has won for the communist regime. There was the question whether or not we wanted Ulbricht removed and replaced by somebody else. I mean, we in West Germany. Well, I should say the more stupid the man is, the better he is for us. Because the earlier, his own people would want to get rid of him.
This one deals with finance. How can West Germany take the huge obligations of a reunification?
Oh, I don't think it would be a huge obligation if we reunify. You know that out of the destruction of the Second World War, were one reason for a huge boom, for a great prosperity. Because we had to do so much, we had to work so much, we had to produce so much, that it really was one of the reasons for the good economic situation in which we are. And that boom certainly would be continued if East Germany, which is on a very low economic level, they have not reconstructed by far as much as we have in West Germany, so that the businesses in West Germany would be very busy to produce goods for East Germany then. I don't think it would, in case the reunification came about, it would constitute any difficulties for us.
Do you think that it is likely that the Berlin crisis will be resolved by peaceful means?
Yes, I am indeed convinced that the situation can come up in which the Soviet interest would be to have better and friendlier relations with the nations at their western side, especially with Germany, and that under such considerations they would be ready to give up what they have swallowed. It's very hard for them to digest what they have swallowed, and I believe if there were no other reasons, they would be glad to give it up as soon as possible.
Here's another French question. To what extent can we depend on France to go along with the other nations of the West in maintaining a solid front against the Soviet with respect to Berlin?
That question should be directed to my very dear colleague, the French Consul General, who is present here, because I am not competent to answer a question what France is going to do. We trust our neighbor. We know that France was our neighbor who has supported us against a common threat from the West with all her force, and we are convinced that she is going to do so as well in the future. They have different viewpoints on the organization of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, but they firmly belong to the Western Alliance, which tries to build a dam against the aggression that is coming from the East. So we believe that we are going to work together to build up such a dam, and we fully trust in our neighbor as they can trust in us.
You see what makes a great diplomat and an ambassador. we have time for a couple more questions, and this one I think our speaker has answered. In Berlin, how does reconstruction to date in the Soviet sector compare with that in the Western sector?
Well, there's hardly any comparison possible. If you, as an American, you are able to cross into the Eastern sector, a West Berliner couldn't do that. But the West German and the an American would be able to go over the border, to go through the wall, that is, and look around. I believe if you went there, you wouldn't have seen any more differences than you can see there. In the eastern sector, everything is gray and desperate, and the people are badly clad and looking somberly and bad mood. Whereas in West Germany, there is a very lively atmosphere. The stores are full of goods, and the people are looking friendly into the future and have a lot of fun. As you know, the Berliners have their own humor, which they apply whenever the situation becomes a little difficult. There is really a great difference between the free side of Berlin and the Soviet side of Berlin.
This question is, what are the possibilities of the German people allowing another Kaiser, Wilhelm, plus Bismarck, or Hitler to run their government for them?
Well, the Kaiser is a part of a history that has long passed. It is as if you were asked about the period of the Civil War and things like that. They are far away from us. As to the question of a new dictator, I should say dictatorship in a country is like a disease. It's like the measles. Once you have had it and gone through it, you are kind of immune from it. I should say the German have learned a very bitter lesson about dictatorship and Nazism and things like that. And I can assure you that there will be nothing in the future of that sort, because we feel we have learned our lesson.
And this takes a little more hopeful vein. Might Germany welcome a political federation with the other NATO nations, including the U.S.?
Well, gentlemen, being a diplomat, I try to be realistic. It was very difficult to bring six European nations of almost the same structure, economically, politically, and so on, into the organization which we call the common market. We still have not reached the situation that those six countries, even though we have the tendency to do it in the long run, to bring those six countries into a political union, which means into a federation. The more it will be difficult, much more difficult it will be to bring more than the six countries into one federation. I believe in a Atlantic community. In the long run, we should all go closer together. That is, the Europeans and the Americans, both North America, the United States and Canada first. We should all go into that Atlantic alliance. But I believe for a political federation, it's too early.
That's all. Mr. Ambassador Karl Knapstein of the Federal Republic of West Germany, we thank you very much for coming and addressing us. Your talk has been very illuminating, it's been friendly, and it's been helpful to all of us. We thank you, and the meeting stands adjourned.